welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining us from Dallas is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
And relocating from Mexico, he is now in Chicago, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
He's drinking a regular Coca-Cola. Like, dude, you might as well mainline just straight sugar into your veins. You're not going to make it to 40.
Every now and then, a fountain Coca-Cola is enjoyable. I like the fountain every now and then. That's my view. Bontemp says the guy who never has a beverage that's not water over there. Let's just
listen. I have a beer fridge now, and I would, Bontemps, you would be able to appreciate this. It was loaded up for my birthday. It is a thing of beauty.
I can imagine. You've got a lovely fiance. I'm not surprised. So that's good.
She takes care of me.
I remember the Eastern European player that I used to cover, who I won't say who's a great guy and likes to drink. And when he got married, his friends, because you know McMahon is engaged, you know, so his friends kicked in and bought him a tap. They installed the tap in his basement, and he said the reason that his friends did it was so that his wife wouldn't know how much he was drinking. So that's just think bad. About that beer fridge, you know, can be cataloged.
she can count very well.
Yeah. Great. I wish I could say his name, but I don't know if that story is authorized to be told publicly, so I won't say it. Great guy, though. As many Eastern Europeans I've met are. So we have a major event unfolding in the NBA, although I think it's going to kind of be a slow speed crash here with Ben Simmons. Let me just recap.
It's like a sinkhole. It's not even a slow speed crash. Like, it just keeps getting worse.
Based on what I have been told by talking to people involved, what has been reported by Woj and reported by elsewhere, here's what I think the sequence of events have been. And we talked about this last week, but now it's crystallized a little bit more. And Bontemps, please jump in if you think, I know you love to jump in. Jump in if you think I'm getting this, wrong.
All good.
Ben Simmons good. Has a miserable end to the playoff series against the Hawks. We all remember the night where he doesn't take the layup, passes instead to Matisse Thybulle, and Joel Embiid after the game says, well, we had a possession where we were going to tie the game, and instead we ended up with one free throw. And also that night, Doc Rivers, I think we were doing a pod live. It was after the game. We waited after the game to record it. And as we were doing the pod, the Doc Rivers quote, where I can't remember the exact line, but he basically said,
this guy can be a championship point guard, basically.
He was asked, can Ben Simmons be a championship point guard? And he essentially said, I don't know.
And this was after Doc all season long bent over backwards to pump up Ben Simmons and talk about how great he is. And then it was just like, listen, I don't know about this dude.
And earlier in the playoffs, like Edmont, I remember because I was covering, quote unquote, covering that Sixers series. Was it with the Wizards? With the Wizards. And like he opened a press conference on an off day and like didn't take questions right away. Just went on like a 4-minute long lecture for Philly fans and sports radio hosts who didn't appreciate Ben Simmons. You'll appreciate him when he's gone is essentially what he said. And then that's what he said at the end of the season. So shortly after that went down, what I believe Woj reported earlier this summer was that Ben asked to be traded. And I think,
which Daryl Morey replied with, dude, we've been trying.
Right. So, but actually I think their plan was they knew that his value wasn't going to be very, very good. And so I think that their plan was, let's not trade him now. Let's try to get into next season and recover some of his value and then look to trade him next season. But then Ben,
can I make one small correction to that?
Yes.
I think the plan in Philly has been the same, to McMahon's point, the entire time, which is, if Ben Simmons could turn into James Harden or Damian Lillard or someone of that ilk, I think they've always wanted to do that. I just think that at the end of the season, to your point, it was going to be hard for them to get that kind of player in that moment. And so the best thing they could do was to patch things up for as long as they could until they could turn around and turn him into who they want.
Okay.
Right. He's talking James Harden, Damian Lillard, not CJ McCollum, Buddy Hield or whoever it may be.
Right. So, so then Ben asked to be traded. So the Sixers then go out and have trade discussions. And based on what I was hearing from executives who were talking to them, they were asking for trade packages for Ben that implied he was at the top value he possibly could have been, as if he was a first team or borderline first team all NBA player, multiple first star players. Like, they were making offers that were not really in a way to actually get talks going. Mm-hmm. And teams walked away from that saying, well, they don't actually really want to trade him. They're just sort of checking the box that they made some sort of offer or made some sort of discussion. And as Bontemps just said, the belief by these executives, although it wasn't like the Sixers were saying this, was they were waiting for Dame Lillard or Bradley Beal to mm-hmm. ask for a trade. And then they were going to come in and to actually try to seriously make a deal. Ben Simmons was aware of this. He was aware that these offers were going out there that were not going to get any traction. So by the way, when the trade demand was made initially, it was Rich Paul telling Daryl Morey, Ben wants to be traded. Then last week, Josh Harris, Doc Rivers, and Daryl Morey, there may have been other people, but I know those three, flew out to LA where Ben has been working out and posting videos, and met with him. And from what I understand, their intention from that meeting, and by the way, for the owner who owns a lot of businesses and is a busy guy, for the owner to go out there, I think that's significant. Mm-hmm. To take a 6-hour flight, even I'm sure it was on a very lovely private jet, but for the owner to come out there and go to Ben, I think was an indication of where this had reached. It was the owner wanting to deliver the message face to face. Ben was there at this meeting. Not over Zoom, in the room, wherever it was. I'm sure it's some very nice house. And at that meeting, from what I am told, basically what the Sixers wanted to communicate to Ben was, we had some trade talks. There's no trade for you right now. Let's all get on the same page and get ready for training camp. Let's try to get something going. And then if things don't work out, when your value is rebuilt a little bit, then we can revisit this at some point later in the season. Can we all get on the same page here? Let's do that. And Ben had the exact opposite. And what I will tell you is, when you cover the league for a while, there is a difference between a player having his agent ask for a trade to the general manager and the player himself in person looking at the owner face to face and saying, trade me. And in this particular case, saying, if you don't trade me, I'm not going to come to training camp. And that is what I believe happened last week. So whatever happened over the summer, you know, I think it got serious last week. And so that's where we are. And, but the thing is, Bontemps, is that this now getting public, and it stayed private for roughly a week. I think the meeting was last Monday or Tuesday, and it didn't get public until this Philly Inquirer reported it, I think, on this Tuesday. So it stayed, you know, private for a week, but that's going to be really hard to stay private.
Well, especially once training camp starts and there's no Ben Simmons.
That'd be
a pretty good hint.
Now, so the real issue, though, Bontemps, is like, this getting public, I think, has not, it was already going to be tough to trade him, especially if Philly was asking for him like he was at the prime of his value. I know that there are people who are pitching certain trade situations, but it's just not the time to trade a guy, which is why Simmons is trying to force it, because he knows if he doesn't force it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, this obviously makes the situation a little more complicated, but in the end, we're in the exact same place we were when we talked about this last Thursday, and really in the same place that it's been since the moment Ben Simmons passed out of that dunk in game seven of the Eastern Conference semifinals, where it's hard to see how long-term he's going to be in Philly. But as we've also said many, many times on this podcast, if there is a single executive in the league who is not going to be afraid of having this situation get ugly and uncomfortable until it gets to a resolution he wants, it is Daryl Morey. And I don't think that a Ben Simmons trade demand, I don't think a Ben Simmons not coming to training camp, I don't think any of these things are going to change the fundamental course the Sixers are going to take, which is, until there is a resolution in particular with the Damian Lillard situation in Portland, I think that this situation is going to stay in the same place it's in unless the Sixers are able to get a commensurate package that is good enough that they could turn around and then use to their benefit in a trade for a player like Damian Lillard. And I think
that
anything
wouldn't
short
probably happen until that player is available. They're not going to make that on spec.
No, I understand. I'm just saying, I think this is not, I don't think this, I think everything that's happened doesn't change the landscape. And what I find interesting about this is that Ben Simmons throughout this whole thing, I think, has carried himself like he is one of the true stars in the league. And if you go back and look in recent years, guys who have been in similar situations like this, Anthony Davis, James Harden, to some extent, Jimmy Butler, those guys all had teams lining up to trade for them despite everything that was going on. And in this circumstance, that's not really the case. Now, Ben Simmons could be traded. He could be traded now for something, but he's not going to be traded for what you would expect a three-time All-Star with 4 years of team control that's 25, that has the physical gifts that he does, is going to be traded for. All I was going to finish with was, so unless Daryl Morey decides he has to cut bait now and make a trade to make a trade, which, as I think we all agree, he is unlikely to do based off his track record, I just think this is going to remain ugly for a while and uncomfortable for everybody involved until one of these other parts of this situation truly fundamentally changes.
Also, based on where they are as an organization, this is a mature team. This, I mean, I must say every team has room for young players that can develop, but you know, this is a team that is at the end of the process, not at the beginning. McMahon, I remember, you know, last year when the Harden trade went down, there was a lot of speculation that, you know, the Rockets didn't want to do a deal really with the Sixers because of how Morey's departure went, and that they were really a stalking horse just to try to get Brooklyn's offer up as being another party who's bidding. But I remember you reporting at the time that the Rockets just didn't want Ben Simmons.
Yeah,
look, and that was when his value was higher.
There's been a lot of discussion, you know, reporting, whatever the case may be, about the Morey dynamic, but it really simply came down to this. The Rockets felt like, listen, if we're trading James Harden, this is a full-fledged rebuild, and Ben Simmons is not the centerpiece of a rebuild. Now, and honestly, now that things have played out, and certainly there was some luck involved with the way the lottery balls bounced, the ping pong balls bounced with them ending up two and not sending, you know, the fifth pick to OKC. But if they get Ben Simmons, you know, the Rockets win, I don't know, a handful more games, and they are just at best on a path to mediocrity. They did not feel like he was a build your franchise around this guy kind of player. Now, they feel like they've got one of those guys now with Jalen Green. And obviously, you know, a lot to be seen, a lot to be proven there. But I don't think that the Rockets' opinion of Ben Simmons is an outlier. And that's why, like, this James Harden type of package that they're asking for, that's not the market for Ben Simmons. And, you know, okay, hey, let's wait until Bradley Beal potentially asks for a trade. Let's wait until Damian Lillard potentially. Well, I don't know that a Ben Simmons fronted package will be the most attractive offer for one of those guys. There's no, you know, it's not a certainty that
I agree with that.
Sixers are able to make that deal.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Ben is that, to your point, McMahon, Ben is sort of a 25-year-old Russell Westbrook. And I say that in the sense that if you're trying to win 45 games, mm-hmm. Ben Simmons is a great guy to have on your team. He's an awesome defensive player. He's incredibly versatile. He's a terrific passer. He's awesome in the open court. He does a lot of things that can help you win games over 82 games. But if, as we've seen in the playoffs repeatedly, most particularly with his complete unwillingness to shoot from the perimeter and to shoot at all in the fourth quarter, he's a guy that's very hard to build around in playoff games. And so, like, I think in a scenario like this, I think what the Sixers would ideally like to do is, okay, Portland says Dame Lillard's going to be available. If you put Ben Simmons on the market, there are a bunch of teams that would be interested in him if for teams that are trying to get up to a certain level. Then you get some other assets, you put a bunch of picks together, right. Some young guys, whatever. Then you present that to Portland.
Three-team trade.
That's right. But it's just hard. That's the thing about Ben. It's, for as good as he is, his flaws are so glaring that if you're trying to be a real contending team, it's difficult to build around him and have him be part of, like, a main part of your championship core.
The other thing is,
how many teams would trade their best player for Ben Simmons? Let's just bring up Sacramento, for example. They've basically said, you can't get our best player, De'Aaron Fox. You can't get our most promising young player, Tyrese Halliburton. And again, like, I don't know that there's a lot of teams that are, would say, hey, our best player we'll put him in the conversation.
Well, the other thing is that Ben has shown, there's certain times teams look at other guys and like, look, if we just get this guy here, we can do some things with him. And, in a different set of circumstances, Ben's talents could be taken advantage of differently. Mm-hmm. But when you see a player who is really unwilling to follow the most basic instructions of development, i.e. shoot,
right,
and also reacts to pressure situations like he has and is now forcing his way out with a holdout, that's not exactly, teams will bend over backwards for superstars. They will tolerate a lot, and it's usually a good deal. But he doesn't quite fit the profile of it, and that's an issue. But there are teams that could trade, that could put a trade together where they wouldn't be sending their best player for him. But it's a matter.
Not according to what Daryl Morey's been asking for.
Well, like I said,
let's be real. At some point, Daryl Morey's going to have to be realistic about what the market is. If the deal is going to get done.
Well, that's what Ben's trying to force him to do right now. And here's the other thing. Holdouts. And he's not holding out yet. And, I remember dealing with, I've covered, unfortunately, a number of holdouts because, like, over the course of my 10 years covering the Cavs or 12 years or whatever it was, there was four guys who held out, and some of them were free agents. So it wasn't a holdout per se, but they generally have worked for star players. And certainly the last two seasons, I know that Jimmy Butler wasn't like out for weeks on end, but he had like an injury and he was excused, but he was essentially holding out.
Right.
I know Harden, like, again, didn't hold out for weeks on end, but like
his message got across.
Right. The point is that they were trying to make the Timberwolves and the Rockets very uncomfortable. And I know the Rockets said we're comfortable with being uncomfortable, but clearly they weren't.
It didn't last that long. The point is to make it crystal clear, this relationship is not salvageable.
He will not
get the momentum going on getting a deal done. And it's one thing to hold out in camp, it's another when game checks come. But
hold on about that. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike. /rentals. Terms apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. He actually can be fined. Bobby Marks set me straight on this. So he can be fined. This is crazy. He can be fined $227,000 a day for not showing up. Now, typically NBA teams, especially in training camp, early season, typically NBA teams work, quote unquote, work 6 days a week, whether it's practice or games. That means that for every week, if they wanted to fine him for every week, he could be fined about $1.3 million. It makes a lot of money, but
that's
so that is what they could do. And so, you know, the Simmons side basically has told me we are prepared for that ramification. But what I think the reality is that Ben Simmons doesn't, you know, NBA players get paid on different schedules. Some of them get paid early. Some of them, you know, get their like LeBron James for like the last 10 years. I don't remember what the figure is, but there's a certain amount that you're allowed to get on July 1st every year. I don't know if it's 25% or 50%.
I think it's 50, but I don't remember for sure.
But LeBron gets it. There's a handful of guys in the league who gets it. LeBron gets half of his salary on July 1st. In fact, when we had the shutdown for COVID-19 and the players had their salaries reduced, LeBron had already made like his whole salary for the year. And so basically he had to write the league an IOU because he had already been like overpaid and he had to like have it debited out of his check the next year. But Ben's contract, he doesn't get his first check for the 2021-22 season until November 15th. So technically they can fine him $75 million, but he doesn't actually lose money until November 15th. And that's 10 weeks from now. So there's 10 weeks to get this resolved, whether it's him coming back in and waving the white flag, which I would bet against today. And they decide, you know, they decide not to fine him, or it's 10 weeks till he gets fined, or it's 10 weeks till he gets traded. And his new team isn't going to start off by saying, yeah, we're going to apply that 76ers fine. So, you know, there's a chance he's not going to lose any money. Because, you know, the adjudication doesn't come until, you know, well after training camp starts. But he can face that, and if the Sixers want to do that, they could. I don't know if it's the best way to do business, but they could do that.
Well, here's the other thing to remember, too. We're talking about a Sixers team, as you pointed out earlier, that's not in a position where they're going to be wanting young assets back because they're trying to win now. They have Joel Embiid, who's arguably the best player in the league. They're trying to win a championship with him. And the other thing is, this is a team that's well over the salary cap. It's not like they could trade Ben Simmons for nothing salary-wise and go into next offseason and have lots of money to go chase a player. That's so they cannot trade Ben Simmons for 25 cents on the dollar. They just can't, because this is one of their few avenues to get a significant player back to remain a championship level
team. One of the things that could be interesting for them is Tyrese Maxey. He was very good in his limited time in the playoffs last year. He was very good in summer league. Mm-hmm. What if he comes into camp and has a really good preseason and they're like, wow, we might be able to play this guy as our ball handling guard? That if that happens, that could change some things. You know,
by the way, a clutch client, which, you know, I think as ugly as things might get, you still need to maintain a working professional relationship with Rich Paul and clutch.
Let me just say something. I've known Rich Paul for almost 20 years. Okay. We are not friends. He gets mad at me on a regular basis. Trust me. But I'll tell you one thing. He gets mad at me about something. We deal with it and it's over with. And we have new business the following week or the following month. And this is how I've watched Rich operate since the first day he became an agent. You can go, you can have a knockdown, drag out fight with him about a player, whether it's a contract or a trade demand, because he's had a lot or whatever. And then if the next day you have to deal with him on another player, he will not let it affect him. I see these people saying, well, you don't want to get on the wrong side of Clutch Sports and Rich doesn't want his guys in a certain city or whatever. If he doesn't want his guys in a certain city, it's because he doesn't like the coach or the organization or whatever. It's not because they mistreated another player. I would say one of the traits that he has as a businessman is his ability to completely section off player to player. He has always been that way. I remember when he was with CAA and part of LeBron's representation when LeBron left and went to Miami. And the first game that the Cavs had after LeBron left, Rich was sitting courtside. And they ended up drafting Tristan Thompson, one of his clients, and he was there all the time. When LeBron walked on Cleveland, the guy who made the call to the Cavs to inform them that he was leaving was Rich. He was also the guy that negotiated LeBron's return 4 years later. So this is a quick aside here. I see people making assumptions about him. You can find fault with the way he does things. And, you know, he just got sued by Nerlens Noel, a player last week. I wrote the story about him getting sued. Okay. I had to reach out to him and say, do you have a comment on this? He did not. All right. So I'm just telling you, if you want to find faults with him, you can find them. But is making assumptions that he's going to let something that happens with Ben Simmons affect the way he conducts business with the Sixers for Tyrese Maxey is just not who he is. Okay. But Bontemps, let's say Maxey looks good in the preseason.
Yeah.
Let's say they say, this guy can be our starting point guard.
Yep.
What, you know, like, let me just, I don't think this is necessary. I'm just going to tell you right now. I didn't hear this. Nobody's whispered this to me. No possibility. I'm just coming up with a complete and total me, myself, and I coming up with this. Are we agreed? What if Golden State were to come with an offer of one or two of their young guys and Andrew Wiggins, and they know that Tyrese Maxey can be a their functional starting point guard? That's information that we may not have today.
I think it's an interesting point. And I think the thing that's interesting about what you're saying is not the trade part of this. It's that, again, the Sixers are trying to win a championship, right? If they have a starting lineup on opening night of Tyrese Maxey, Danny Green, Matisse Thybulle, Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid, that's still a pretty good team.
Yeah.
It's not a team that's going to win 35 games. They have the ability to still be a good, solid team while this situation plays out. And I think it bears repeating. They are in a position where they have to make a trade that allows them to still be a championship caliber team. They cannot make a trade that's going to set them back three steps. So I think that is the thing that people have to look at, I think, through the prism of all of this stuff. Like saying, oh, the Sixers just have to get this over with in the next couple of weeks. You can't have this hanging over the team in training camp. No, that is the opposite way you have to look at this. This is the one move they have to make. And they have been clearly focused on trying to get Damian Lillard or some other star player in there for a while. And I do not see a scenario in which Daryl Morey lets that go by the board to just have an uncomfortable situation go away. And I think the Tyrese Maxey point is important in that the Sixers do have a point guard that they can start on their team, and they do have other good players. So it's not like, you know, again, barring a Joel injury, which would mess their team up anyway, they're probably not going to be 10 and 25, 35 games into the season. Even if Ben doesn't play a game, they're still going to be pretty good, and they can wait and see how this thing shakes out.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, if there is a decision-making executive in the league who doesn't mind being uncomfortable, or is immune to being uncomfortable, I would say, It is Daryl Morey. I mean, this is a guy, there was a player with the Rockets who eventually ended up getting traded, but basically, you know, he was almost from the time he signed, he was in trade rumors. For some reason, this guy invited Daryl Morey to his bachelor party. Daryl Morey pulled him over to the side of his bachelor party and you know, brought up trade rumors. And the guy's like, what are you, like, Daryl, go have a drink. Leave me alone. I don't need you to lie to my face right now. You know, like the Chris Paul situation. I firmly
imagine inviting your general manager to your bachelor party.
Yeah, well, that was on the player. I firmly believe that had Russell Westbrook not become available, that the Rockets would have gone into the next season with Chris Paul on the roster. I firmly believe had it been completely Daryl Morey's decision, they would have done that, because his thing was, look, it's about he's always been about talent.
That's
over
right.
Chemistry. That is
what right. is he? What has he always been about, Tim? Maximizing your championship window, right?
Yes,
that's all he ever thinks about. So yeah. Trading Ben Simmons for 35 cents on the dollar to just get him out of the way and dramatically diminishing their championship window is polar opposite of everything this guy has ever said.
Yeah. And
don't you
and
think you that could... that was related to Ben at that? I don't know this. Let me be clear. I don't know this for sure, but don't you think they told Ben that before they left, or have told him that since?
And look, I also can look at it from Ben Simmons' perspective and be like, you know what? I get that. It ain't my job to restore my value. From the day Daryl Morey got to Philly, he's been trying to trade Ben Simmons. And, you know, if you're a 76ers fan, you're like, yeah, no crap. He tried to trade him for James Harden. Who wouldn't? But still, you understand that Ben Simmons knows, okay, this guy tried hard to trade me last year. The playoffs went the wrong way. You know, my co-star backed the bus over me. The coach backed the bus over me. Yeah. And so, you know, Ben Simmons is looking at like, look, the relationship's over, not my job to restore my value. I don't want to play another second with the Sixers. I'm not going to do anything that would lead to that.
Well, what a Sixers fan would say here is, well, you're signed for 4 more years. You don't have any leverage. You have to come play. And he doesn't have leverage. His leverage really is.
His leverage is making it uncomfortable. That's his leverage.
Right. That for every day of training camp that the players and Embiid is going to get asked and Doc is going to get asked, what about Ben Simmons? Or that, let's say that even if Maxey plays well or whatever happens with Maxey, let's say they start 1-3 or something.
Yeah.
That's his leverage. And
and honestly, his leverage is if he does go out there and play, it's, you know, half ass effort. It's taken 2 shots in 33 minutes. You know,
that sounds like Kevin Love.
Well, yeah, like Kevin Love, although, you know, I think Simmons' value is a little bit different there. And honestly, it's like what Harden did last year in Houston. Harden came out, balled in the opener, just to kind of remind people, hey, I'm that dude. I can go for 44-17 fresh off the, Atlanta-Vegas training camp tour. And then he mailed it in the rest of the time he was in a Rockets uniform.
The difference, though, with this and that, Tim, is that if Ben Simmons comes out and plays really well, maybe some teams will step up with some offers to get closer to where the Sixers are at, right? Like, that's true. The thing. Like, his leverage in trying to get something to happen immediately is to make things uncomfortable. I think his best path to getting out of Philly as fast as he can is to show up and play really well. Because that's the one way I think that his value could increase. I don't think any of this stuff is going to dramatically decrease his value or decrease what teams are going to trade for him, because everybody knows the pros and cons of Ben's game. It's not like any of that is going to change if he's just sitting at home not playing. But if he shows up and is, you know, balling out and playing great, and it's like, you know, I'm not happy here, but I'm going to do whatever I have to do to get out of here and play well, like, maybe that boosts his value. Somebody gets out of there, but, you know, it's
maybe,
but ultimately
I don't think it boosts it to the point where there's a, you know, if the ask is superstar plus in return, it's just, that ain't happening.
No, I agree. I mean, look, that's all coming from the same place, that they're not going to trade him unless it allows them to have the ability to trade for another guy. Like, that's all it comes down to. Like, right. they're just not going to trade him for a collection of middling role players. Like, they're just not going to do that. Like, people keep talking about Minnesota. Like, the idea that they're going to trade Ben Simmons for Malik Beasley and Jaden McDaniels and some filler salary, I just think is,
and again, insane. It's like Sacramento. You know, we're not talking about playoff teams here, but these are teams, you know, Minnesota's like, no, Cat's not in the conversation. No, right. Anthony Edwards.
Well, Sacramento's
conversation. So
the reason some of these teams are interested in him is that it's very difficult to sign a star player, and he is a star. He may not be a superstar, but he is a star. Some of these places are never going to be able to get a star player as a free agent, and by doing it this way, they get a guy who's under contract for 4 years.
Right.
That's why
if you're Minnesota or Sacramento or Cleveland, some team that's like trying to get back in the playoff mix, and you could turn some stuff into Ben Simmons, that's a great deal. Because again,
yeah, look,
if you're trying to win 45 games, he's really going to help you a lot.
Yeah, and would he fit great with Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards? Absolutely. The problem is, if the conversation with the non-playoff team starts at their third or fourth best player, then we're talking about Morey asking too much. Like, I don't blame him for not wanting to participate in those discussions.
And that's the rub here. That's the rub of this whole thing, is that you've got Ben thinking, I'm a star. Teams want to trade for me, trade me somewhere. You've got the Sixers saying, we want to trade for a superstar. You are a star, but we can't trade you for 50 cents on the dollar and then trade you for a star. We can't trade you to like open up for tap space to go sign a star. Right. So that's where the gulf is. And it's going to be hard for them to fill it anytime soon, which again is why I just think this situation is going to drag on and on and on until we see either teams come up with offers somewhere close to where Philly wants, or you see some movement on either Dame or Bradley Beal or one of these, some guy of that caliber player, which does not seem to be coming anytime soon either.
Okay. So to be continued, one other thing we want to talk about before we left was another significant move that happened in the league last week, a very unusual and unexpected three-team sign and trade that sent Lauri Markkanen to Cleveland, Larry Nance to Portland, and a first round pick and some other pieces to Chicago. This was a move that, I mean, I don't think is going to have a significant impact on the NBA this year. Mm-hmm. But I think a couple of things came out of it. One, it made it 100% clear that the Cavs are focused on trying to get out of Kevin Love, because they've now drafted Evan Mobley, signed Jared Allen to a $100 million deal, and then signed Larry Markkanen to a $67 million deal. And Markkanen is not a small forward. I guess you can try to play him there and pretend, but that's not who he is.
Absolutely. He ain't a small forward.
So those three guys are going to be playing, and so now you're going to have this whole Love situation. That's number one. Number two.
And Love's agent telling Woj, we ain't doing buyouts.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Well, here's the thing. Before we get past that, let me just stop with that. Kevin Love, you know, to get out of that, you know, we saw Blake Griffin. How much should Blake still have on his contract?
I don't remember the exact number. It was around 70 million, and he gave back 20.
He didn't give back.
I thought he gave back like 12.
Or 12. Or 12. No, 13. You're right. 13. That's right. 13. You're right.
Okay.
Kemba gave back 20. That's what I was thinking.
That's right. Kemba gave back 20, but then got it back from the Knicks. Blake Griffin gave back 12-ish, 13 million. He ended up signing minimums with the Nets. He's not going to make that money up. So it's going to have cost him around 10 million bucks.
But he got to go play a significant role for a contender. So he's happy.
That's what he got for his money. So basically that's the starting point for the Cavs too. Kevin Love's owed 60 million over this year and next. They're like, listen, you want to go play for somebody else, it's going to cost you. And then it becomes a debate.
Yep.
Is it cost you $10 million? Is it going to cost you $15 million or wherever?
And I know that where's his landing spot?
Right. Well, hold on for a second. I know that Kevin and the Cavs can say that they haven't had buyout conversations, but of course
they've had
buyout conversations. It's ridiculous to believe that they haven't. So what's happened here is Kevin was like, you know, in a position where he's like, boy, how much money am I willing to give up? And then they do this deal for Markkanen. And Kevin looks at the, you know, this is what I believe happened. I'm not 100% sure of this, but Kevin has to look at this and say, oh, wait a minute.
This depth chart does not look great.
Right. You can't play me, you know, you don't want me around not playing. Like you got to, you know, you've got your front court of the future here. You got to get rid of me. So guess what? You're just going to have to release me. I want all 60 million. Just cut me. Okay. And if you're the Cavs, you're going to be like, huh, we're not going to cut you. We have a plan where everybody's going to have minutes and JB Bickerstaff is going to figure it out. Good luck, coach. And they're going to be like, we're not.
Can we interest you in being the go-to guy in the Canton charge?
No longer in Canton. They're now in back. They've been relocated to Cleveland. How dare you?
What a dated reference.
So it just happened. So that's what's going on with Love. But now Kevin Love is getting out of there. Come hell or high water at some point, he's going to be a free agent, and where he goes, it could be interesting. Don't call Jerry Colangelo for a letter of recommendation because that's not going to be happening. So that is the fallout of this. The other thing is that I'm not sure that it like dramatically changed the trajectory of the Trailblazers, but getting Larry Nance, who's one of the better four or five defenders in the league, is a nice pickup for the Blazers.
It takes me from being unsure if they're going to be over to thinking they're going to be over. Like, I think they're going to be a top six or seven team now. I wasn't sure about that before.
And notably, they gave up a first round pick, a team that is bracing to have to move the longtime face of the franchise. You know, that's not a team that's giving up first round picks.
Well, it's also what Dame wanted. Now, I think Dame would have preferred, you know, they trade for, you know, Bradley Beal.
Right.
It's not a perfect because it's CJ's position, but
some superstar player. He would like them to have got some star player.
Yeah, I think that's what he prefer, but I think that was the type of thing he's looking for.
The question is this the Rockets trading, giving up a first round pick to get Robert Covington?
The Blazers already have Robert Covington.
My point is,
I know.
You know what I'm saying? And then it still ends up going down anyways.
Well, that could. And maybe it is just sort of, it's a half measure. Because if they do have to trade Dame, they're obviously going to get a whole bunch of stuff back.
Well, and it is a lottery, and it's a lottery to protect it first. But he's a good player who fits a position in need for them. I really like, it's a really good move for them. It makes them, I think, a decent amount better. It's not a move that's going to, you know, make them the number one seed in the West, but he's a good player. He's had some injury issues. He could stay healthy. He's a good shooter, or he's gotten become a decent shooter. He's a really good defensive player, versatile, can be a small ball center, can play on the either forward spot. Like he's a really nice fit there.
He fits what they need. Whether he moves the needle is a, you know,
I'm not trying to say they're going to be.
And how much does he move the needle? You know, that's the thing with Dame. It's not about like, hey, are they better? Sure. Do you look at them and say they've got a chance of coming out of the West? No.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think it's really that much different, but at least I do think the window for Dame to have demanded a trade is now temporarily closed. We'll see how temporarily it is, but
we'll see where they're at January 15th.
Yeah. Only he knows how close he was, but he was as close as he's ever been. And I think he's backed away from it. And I was just talking to somebody. I think he's getting married soon. Number one, Dame. I think he's getting married this month. And also he's working very hard on his latest record. So I was talking to someone who knows him just this week, and they were saying Dame is focused on this wedding and this record. He's no longer talking about wanting to, you know, his unhappiness or whatever, the uncomfort with the Blazers. So I guess that's a win for the Blazers in the short term, because the water was boiling and I think now it's just simmering. So,
by the way, a win, I think you got to say this is a win for the Bulls in this situation.
Okay. Hold on. Now we're going to get to the Bulls.
Okay.
A lot of people did say it was a win for the Bulls. And I want to know why. Because,
well,
I'll be the 100th person to say, the 1,000th person to say, why didn't the Bulls, who have no defense? First off,
that's a fair question.
The fact that they were able to get something for Lowry of value, considering how acidic that had become, and considering they were at the end of the transaction season and there was very little options for him, I think that was a good accomplishment.
Yes, in a vacuum, getting a first round pick for Lowry Markkanen, even a protected pick, is
when you had no plans to keep him.
That's right. That is a win in a vacuum. Now, as we have talked about repeatedly on the pod in recent weeks, the Chicago Bulls have clearly gone all in on the 2021-22 season. And as an extension of that, have gone all in on trying to keep Zach LaVine. So let's look at this transaction. There's one good player
just changed
in the trade.
Agents.
Well, that's right. Just changed agents to Rich Paul. But there's one good player in this trade, in my opinion. That is Larry Nance Jr. And the Cavs could have just done Larry Nance Jr. for Lowry Markkanen. That could have been the trade.
The reason
Lowry's salary is where it is because of the money coming out from Larry Nance going out of Cleveland. So that could have been the trade. Could have just done Larry Nance for Lowry Markkanen. Now, if I'm the Bulls and I'm trying to be as good as possible in 2021-22, would I rather have Larry Nance or would I rather have Derek Jones Jr., who is an okay player, is a decent fit for their team, and that he's a defender who doesn't really shoot, but they've got plenty of other guys to score.
He'll catch lobs from Lonzo.
Like, he's an okay fit there. He's not a terrible player. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have a guy who's basically a younger version of Thad Young, who is the guy that we've talked about was a huge loss for them at trade? I would rather have Larry Nance Jr. by a pretty significant amount. So that's where, to me, that's where I struggle with the logic here from the Bulls side, because yes, it is a win to get a first for him and to get Derrick Jones, who's an okay player, and you don't pay Lowry long-term, which I think would have been a mistake. But if you're trying to win right now, the best guy in the trade went somewhere else who you could have got in the trade.
Yeah.
Portland didn't need to be in the trade. Could have said, hey guys, send us Larry Nance. We'll send you Lowry Markkanen. We're all done here.
The Cavs also tossed in a second, so the Bulls could have probably got that second.
The Cavs tossed in, by the way, people have said like the Bulls got a second. The Bulls basically got a fake second in that trade.
Okay.
I mean, it's a top 47 protected second round pick.
Okay. All right. So
I love the protection on second round picks.
It's insane.
My favorites are the top 55 protected.
Yes, those are truly fake. This
one. You
want to
know why they're
fake.
Top 55 protected? Because the league doesn't allow top 59 protected.
That's right.
At some point they had to come up with a rule on that. They're like, should we make it 55 or 57? All right, 55. The other thing I think so this question got asked around the league. Why wouldn't you just take Larry Nance? Mm-hmm. And the belief in the league is that it's because Derek Jones, his contract ended after this season. And Larry Nance, even though it's a reasonable contract, I think he's around $9 and change next year.
It's under $10 million.
They didn't want the money on their books for next year because they've got all these contracts that they signed that are going to go up and they're preparing to, offer Zach LaVine a max or near max contract. I assume it's going to be a max. I don't want to get stuck in that, but, and they're watching.
I would say if they want to keep them, it better be a max.
Well, they want to keep them. They better have the best team possible this year.
That too.
So, now maybe Arturis Kanishevis, their general manager, would say, well, just wait and see what we do with that first round pick. And we'll have Derek Jones, whatever that first round pick can deliver us, and we'll make us better. And maybe that will be the case.
It's very hard to see that package being better than Larry Nance. If it is, kudos to them, but it's hard to see if they do that.
Congrats to Markkanen, by the way, for getting $67 million or whatever the guarantee is in the last year still.
Well, I saw Lowry, he had these quotes. I think it was to I don't think he's done
it. It was in Finland.
Yeah. So I don't know how they got translated, but he was very excited about joining the Cavs. I mean, this is a marriage of convenience. He's going to a place where he's not going to be the starter.
I was
going to
say the role doesn't necessarily change a whole lot. He got money.
He was frustrated he wasn't the starter in Chicago, and he just went to a place where the 4 and 5 there are the two cornerstones of their organization.
One just got a $100 million deal. One was the number 3 overall pick.
Right. And so he took the money where he could get it. And, you know, he had to deal with the realities and the frustrations of being a restricted free agent. It's, you know, but, you know, I don't know if there was anybody who was very happy with this. You know, Nance is from Cleveland.
Other than Larry Nance. I think Larry Nance is pretty happy.
I think Nance is happy because even though he was from Cleveland, he was seeing the same thing that Lowry was seeing.
Which right.
Look at all these guys who are going to play all these minutes, and I still want to have one more big contract out of me. How am I going to get it if I'm, you know, the fifth big?
Well, now he goes to a good team. He goes to a good team where they're going to win a lot of games, assuming Dame is still there, and he's going to have a big role there. As opposed to, and I mean, he would probably rather been in Cleveland than any other bad team, given he's from there and has obviously deep roots there. But still, like this point in his career, you would think he would want to go.
I think once, if he had found out that Markkanen was coming to the Cav, let's say that they just had cap space and they signed him, I think he would have probably said, there might not be room for me here. Can you trade me? So the fact that it came with the trade of him, I think ended up working out. But let's just see where the Bulls are defensively. Nance is one of the league leaders in steals. Now, the problem is he apparently has fragile hands. He has great hands because he is one of the league leaders in steals as a big. He can switch out to small guys and defend them, but he keeps having hand and wrist injuries because he's reaching for these balls. But let's just see when we get into the season whether or not that defensive big could have really been used by the Bulls. Let's see mid-season they're looking for a defensive big man.
Well, listen, McMahon mentioned it before. Was Zach changing agents? You did the story talking to Zach during Team USA when he talked about wanting his respect. You look, Bobby Marks, our you know, cap guru, has already looked ahead to next summer, and it's going to be the summer of Zach LaVine. There's really not a lot of other guys.
Summer of Zach LaVine.
I mean, there's the way that the league is going now with these extensions. We saw Clint Capella sign an extension this week. Mike Stinger at the Denver Post reported that Aaron Gordon and the Nuggets are probably going to come to an extension agreement. Yes, like you're seeing most of these guys are extending ahead of time, not getting to free agency. We saw all these, you know, Joel has extended out. All these other guys have extended and are not going to be on the market. So the Bulls have put themselves in this position where, you know, as you've mentioned several times on the pod, Brian, they could have tried to go to Zach and do some full renegotiation and extend, try to get him up to a max this summer back.
Well, I think they had discussions about an extension with Zach, but they didn't. They prioritized spending their cap space on DeRozan.
They prioritized rather than locking him up to a max now, trying to surround him with as much talent to win now. Because Zach, as we have also talked about, has never won four games in a row in his NBA career. So their bet is that we're going to come back. We're going to have a playoff team. Zach's going to be the star of our playoff team, and that's going to get him to want to stay. But
maybe that'll happen.
And maybe it will happen, but it had better happen because that is the situation they have built for themselves. And if they finish,
you have said that you think that the Bulls will have a losing record this year.
I do think that
if we get to January and the Bulls have a losing record or a near losing record, what's Zach LaVine going to do? Now, maybe we get to January and they're in fourth place. I don't know.
I just think you look at that and maybe they squeak into the playoffs, but you're talking about the two biggest moves they made, with all due respect to Lonzo Ball, is in the last year, is two 30-plus-year-old, you know, very good offensive players, subpar defensive players. I just think it's very difficult to look at that situation from Zach LaVine, a star, potential, you know, superstar entering his prime, and feeling like, man, the arrow is really pointed up here.
Well, look,
is there any way you think Zach LaVine could make the All-NBA team this year?
Yeah. He put up All-NBA caliber numbers. I would say the biggest obstacle would be the Bulls record, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, he had some support, I would say weak support, but some support in circles last year to be an All-NBA player. To Tim's point, I mean, look, if like, could Zach LaVine,
you know, do why Julius I'm asking, Rand- right?
Well, no, because he could get to Supermax. And listen, like, look at the season Julius Randle had. Like, Zach LaVine had never really had a breakout season like he did last year before. There were debates about how really good Zach LaVine was until last year. And then he really took a big step forward. He made the All-Star team for the first time. He obviously played on Team USA, as you were there for, Brian. Like, he could be Julius Randle next year and lead the Bulls to 48 wins. Like if the Bulls finish fourth or fifth in the East, Zach very well may make an All-NBA team next year. That's very possible. But again, like you look at the top of the East, you got Milwaukee, Miami, Brooklyn, Philly, probably all going to be better than Chicago. I think Atlanta's probably going to be better than Chicago. That's already five teams. Then you've got the Knicks, the Celtics, the Raptors, the Pacers with Tim's friend Rick Carlisle coaching them. They're probably going to be a lot better. You got the Wizards who have a bunch of depth. You have Charlotte, which is going to be okay. There's a lot of good, solid teams in the middle of the East. Like it's not easy to just roll up 43 wins to make the playoffs this year. So
McMahon,
you know, we'll see what happens.
You should ride with Carlisle when he flies his plane from Dallas.
He sold his plane during the pandemic.
Oh,
he no longer has that plane. Now he can afford a new one, but
by the way, so we're going to go here in a second, but by the way,
I actually want to ask one question about this. Isn't flying like the perfect pandemic pastime? Be up in the air by yourself.
Plus gas was cheap.
I don't know. He just told me, I asked if he'd gone, you know, if he'd been flying at all lately, and told me he sold his plane.
So here's the thing, like McMahon did this story one time about flying with Carlisle in his plane, and he's referenced
incredible
this a couple
story.
Times. And this plane has a built-in parachute. So if the plane breaks or there's disaster in the air,
if things go haywire, he can hit a button and the parachute pops out.
So I'm going to tell you this. I thought about this because over the summer, there was two planes that collided near the Denver airport. One of them was like a propeller cargo plane, and it hit one of these planes that had a parachute, and the guy hit the parachute and landed safely.
There you go.
So how about that?
Now, when I went up in this plane,
he sold that plane.
Yeah. What he didn't tell me until after I'd already been up in the air with him was that he wouldn't let his wife and daughter fly with him. He didn't value my life.
No problem.
Yeah, you.
By the way,
hang out the window for all I care.
There's two buttons. There's a parachute and an ejector for the seat. Actually, the button.
Oh no, I was backseat. There was a flight instructor who was riding shotgun.
There's a button for that too. All right, thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Bontemps and McMahon. Hope everybody has a good weekend. College football is going on. I got Ohio State playing tonight. Hope it's a victory. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. We'll talk to you later.
Happy Amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.